A charitable investment pays off big amid questions. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A medical charity announced this morning it sold royalty rights to a powerful drug it funded and helped develop. The New York Times first broke the story. The payout, $3.3 billion, is 20 times last year's budget, the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and it dwarfs the money the nonprofit originally gave toward the development of the drug. I asked Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein from our health desk at WHYY to look into this. Dan, the most money a nonprofit has ever received in this type of arrangement, it says.
This is an interesting kind of thorny story. Certainly this money can fund more research, which is important. While life expectancy for people with the disease has nearly doubled since 1980, and this drug is the first to treat the underlying cause, it's expected to only help a sliver of patients. What makes this controversial is the cost, which is about $300,000 a year.
A year for a drug that is a great help to patients with this excruciating condition. But some are asking if the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation might have pushed harder to lower the price of the medicine if they were not getting the royalty payments.
Yeah, that's certainly part of the dilemma here. The Times cites the foundation saying it has no control over the price and points out that this money will only help accelerate research. Apparently, some sort of endowment's going to be created. What this story really tells us, though, is that we're seeing part of a broader trend here, sometimes called venture philanthropy. On one hand, it makes perfect sense, the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation or the Multiple Sclerosis Society is pouring money into research. You know, and if they can get a cut, then they want to. But this is new and sort of different. And thinking about a charity making money is a little strange. Here's the thing. The accountability comes if and when people who are sick can't get care while those nonprofits are reaping up big windfalls.
All right. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein. Thank you very much. It's interesting to hear from people who would rather take a cruise than risk a trip on land because they're worried about getting a stomach bug in a foreign country. The Carnival Corporation, which owns Carnival and Princess Cruise Lines, among others, is starting a new social media campaign next week to drum up business from people who've never taken a cruise before. There's an online ad contest, a Twitter campaign, and more designed to change the conversation from norovirus outbreaks on ships or ships that sink, like the one off Italy that time. Nova Safo reports.
When I explained Carnival's plans to Mitch Joel, president of digital marketing firm Twist Image, he had this reaction.
I would think it's not only risky, but I don't even understand why they would engage in this.
Joel says companies that run online campaigns need to know the answers to some crucial questions ahead of time.
Do people really, really care and really want to help us, or are they going to turn this into a parody and a joke and make matters a whole lot worse for us?
There are times that you can do it if there is strong brand affinity.
That's Don Stanley. He's an online marketing consultant and professor at the University of Wisconsin. He says the internet is littered with online campaigns gone awry.
The biggest mistake I see companies make is they think through the potential benefits of the campaign, but they don't plan for potential problems.
Like the Twitter hashtag McD stories that McDonald's tried out a couple of years ago. It backfired, and the company shut it down within hours. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
The government says the cost of raising a child to age 18 in America is up 2% this year to $245,000. Wonderfully, that number is calculated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture like the kid is some kind of crop. What the statistic leaves out, however, is what happens if that child ever asks for a pony for a birthday or the holidays. This week, we're collaborating with the New York Times on something called A Guide to Buying Just About Anything. Today, Times reporter Paul Sullivan has a piece on how it's not the horse, it's the maintenance.
Hi.
At Echo Farms in South Salem, New York, Carlton Henrik feeds her horse Emery a handful of treats. She bought Emery only a month ago, but they've already hit it off. Emery's a 5-year-old thoroughbred. Henrik shopped around at a bunch of farms in the Northeast before buying Emery in Oxford, Pennsylvania.
It's not like buying a car where you just need it to do what you need it to do. There's a personality in there, and you have to fit your personality with the horse's personality, or you're just going to have these clash of wills and have it be an unpleasant experience.
And an unpleasant experience could lead to injury for an inexperienced rider. Rachel Castle McCart is an attorney outside Portland, Oregon, who exclusively practices equine law. She says safety and temperament should be considerations when buying a horse.
Yeah, it's not like your golden retriever that you can take them to obedience school. There's really a lot that goes into horse training.
The horses at Echo Farms range in value from $2,500 on up to $50,000. Bronx native Donna Ferrara owns one and leases two others. It's not cheap.
Well, there's board.
$1,300 a month.
There's the spring and fall shots.
$400 total.
There's the shoeing.
$250 every 6 weeks.
Then he needs his coats. He has three different kinds of coats. And then he needs his blanket. Am I forgetting anything?
A few things. Saddles, bridle, riding clothes, boots for the rider. There's lessons, competition cost. Add it all up.
More than my mortgage.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah. But, it's a way of life. It's a family.
At Echo Farms, the owners are responsible for their horses' maintenance and getting them set up to ride. And the children take on much of that responsibility. Both of Farrar's daughters are longtime riders. Amanda is 17. She's at the barn 6 days a week.
You go to the barn after school, and then when you get home, you eat dinner and you do your homework. I remember when I was young, instead of going out with friends to do whatever, we'd stay at the barn and clean tack. We couldn't be happier to do that.
For those less than happy to pay the hefty price tag attached to owning a horse, there are other options, like partial leasing or joining a horse club. But even those can end up costing thousands of dollars a year. In New York, I'm Paul Sullivan for Marketplace.
Paul's piece is part of our partnership with the New York Times called A Guide to Buying Just About Anything this week. There's a section in the newspaper today that includes some of our reporting as well. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.